It's going to be an incredibly rich conversation with scholars who are the very best examples of public intellectuals. I'm speaking of Charles Taine in particular. He has long been a hero of mine, sociologist by training, but also an activist. And he and Dr. Hogan are going to really set the stage for understanding the arc, the moral arc of the universe, and hopefully how it bends towards justice, and how Freedom Summer still has great resonance and still has things to teach us for today.
Why in 2014 is this such an important and relevant discussion when we talk about that summer or the Civil Rights Act?
You know, there have been points in our history when we've been able to sort of delude ourselves that race and racism are not issues that we need to worry about anymore. There are folks who have a tendency to think that if we don't talk about it because it's so difficult, maybe it'll just kind of quietly go away. But certainly with the election of President Obama in 2008 and the concomitant rise in the number of hate groups that was documented by the FBI, and when we look at quality of life issues and the disproportionate effect of racism in healthcare and housing and education and criminal justice, and then we look at, of course, the horrific events that have happened in Ferguson, we have not dealt with the subject of race adequately as a country, and we need to. We owe it to ourselves to improve our democracy and to value all human beings equally. The country is a wonderful country, but it could be greater if we would take seriously this issue.
Do you think the dialogue and discussion or the types of questions people are going to have, would that vary depending on where you had this symposium? Or are these race issues universal no matter where you go in this country?
No, the answer to that is actually yes and no. There would be regional varieties of discussions, and there should be. In fact, far too often when we talk about race, we talk about big events like slavery, like the Middle Passage, like the rise of segregation and Jim Crow, maybe a big incident when a celebrity, makes a racist comment and there's an outcry like a Paula Deen. But the problem is we try to lump all of those conversations into one conversation on race, and we don't get anywhere. The conversations that are the most effective when it comes to race and racism are the ones that are the most local. Because where race and racism have, in fact, been a part of all of the history of every one of the states in our country, they have played out differently depending on the histories of those particular places. So the history of Mississippi is very different from the history of Illinois in some ways. Where we have what we have in common is that race affects all of us. But the more particular, the more local, the more specific we can get, the better we are at being able to provide solutions to the problems that affect our own neighborhoods.
Why is it so taboo still to talk about race?
You know, I think it's taboo because we don't get taught how to talk about it. And our society favors a debate model, a soundbite model, instead of a dialogue model. So too often it is about trying to make your point and not listening to what someone else has to say. We believe that the best conversations, the most effective conversations about race, are ones that take place within civil, respectful spaces that, in fact, we co-create together with, in fact, parameters about how we're going to hold that space together. And then you can build trust and build understanding so that you can then hear the difficult truth that you need to understand before you can move toward collective action.
Can you tell me a little more about the William Winter Institute and your role down there for our audience who might not be as familiar with the day in and day out workings of that group?
I appreciate that. We are based at the University of Mississippi, which has a particular history in civil rights timeline. Of course, there was a riot at my campus in 1962 to try to prevent James Meredith from desegregating the school. And so it's a history that has haunted us, but it also has given us a special obligation to try to do something positive about race. And so the Winter Institute's work is both to support institutional transformation on our campus and also to support community building across the state, which we do now in 16 communities in our state, and then also in New Orleans, and working with the University of Alabama. And we're particularly excited about the youth work that we do. We bring students together, high school students from all across the state, in the summer to learn how to become change agents in their own communities, but through the lens of Mississippi civil rights history.
And you know, Susan, we're hearing so much. You mentioned working with younger folks. We're hearing so much now about the millennial generation and the fact of how diverse it is. Do you see that as a positive, you know, just by nature of the generation having the qualities that it supposes to have, just the makeup of it, that these issues of social justice and education and civil rights for diverse groups will get better?
I am very hopeful because I work with fantastic young people who want to be engaged in making their communities better. I will say that because the university is often a sort of a proxy for talking about these issues, we are also visited by groups that don't value diversity. So we've had visits by the Ku Klux Klan and neo-Confederate groups that want to try to stay focused on a history that they don't in fact accurately portray. And some of those folks have been younger people. So there's still some work to do. I don't want anyone to get sort of comfortable and feel like everything's been done. But it is those very young people who we engage with who give me hope that we're moving in the right direction. And as long as we stay connected to those kids and provide them the tools that they need, they will show us how to get out of this morass.